Welcome to GhostBiz here on the Business Report on Over 103.5. I'm Gary Strubel, and every week I get the opportunity to talk to the finance ghost who brings us up to date with what's going on the markets here and internationally. So, Ghost, welcome back to the show. Let's perhaps start out with a story that doesn't get boring if you're into understanding what makes great businesses tick. And that's ShopRite. They have again achieved, for the quarter in September, sales growth of 10.4%. And they've opened a net 68 stores, with 53 of those stores in the South African segment. ShopRite is a juggernaut.
ShopRite is a juggernaut. And you're right. In some respects, it actually gets a bit boring. It's like, oh, look, double-digit growth at ShopRite. You know, who would ever have guessed? But the reality is that these businesses are like really large ships at sea, you know, and once they are going in a particular direction, they just keep on going. Likewise, to try and turn them around is really difficult. And if you contrast the ShopRite numbers to the stuff we recently saw out of Pick n Pay, now I still just cannot get my head around a bullish position on Pick n Pay itself. I mean, Boxer within Pick n Pay is clearly a great business, but the rest of Pick n Pay is doing extremely badly. And when you see ShopRite come out with these sort of double-digit growth numbers, you can see that Pick n Pay just keeps on shedding market share to ShopRite. Pick n Pay is closing stores to try and rationalize, and ShopRite is opening stores. As ShopRite gets bigger and bigger, they're in a better position to negotiate with suppliers, and they get better rebate discounts. And, you know, then Pick n Pay is losing out on volumes rebates because they're losing out on volumes. And so it goes. It's like a python squeezing a little impala, and you know, no prizes for guessing here who the python is and who the impala is. I just don't really know how Pick n Pay turns it around against ShopRite, because ShopRite can just do nothing wrong at the moment. And you know, yes, it's easy to say things can carry on forever, and we've got lots of examples on the market where companies have gotten it wrong, etc. But a large retailer isn't easy to disrupt. You're not going to have someone who pops up overnight or some kind of change in consumer preferences where suddenly supermarkets are not important anymore. It's not that kind of business. Once you've got something like this that is just executing to these standards, getting new leases in place in all the best areas and negotiating with suppliers, you know, good luck beating that. So I think the ShopRite result, just another really great sales update. And I'll say it again for the millionth time, to those who are bullish Pick n Pay, be careful.
Let's take a look at another story, and this is another juggernaut, a company that's really grown enormously over the last 20 years. That's Vodacom. Back in 2021, Vodacom and Remgro announced a deal that would build a fiber powerhouse by putting together fiber assets by the Community Investment Ventures, which is part of the Remgro stable, and those held by Vodacom. But the Competition Tribunal has prohibited. Now, give us your view on one, what the impact of a deal like that does for the sector, and two, perhaps just a view on whether you think it's a rational decision.
This one is a little bit of a mess, to be honest, especially for Vodacom. The telcos find it really difficult to grow on a good day. It's just not easy at all. I think we've spoken about telcos on this show before and kind of pointed out how many of them had to go off into Africa to search for growth and how difficult that is and how that hasn't turned out very well for them at all. And it's because they're just in a very mature market in South Africa. But of course, the one remaining big growth area is fiber. So, you know, Vodacom's gone off and tried to put together this deal with a business within the Remgro stable to go and create more of a scale player in the fiber game. And if they could get that right, it would improve the economics of the sector. And, you know, it would justify a lot more investment. They've kind of pointed to literally billions of rands worth of investment in fiber, including to, you know, areas that don't currently have access to fiber, schools, all that kind of thing. So the public interest score on this would be very, very high. Obviously, the companies involved are not stupid either. You know, they were hoping that by promising some of those things, they would kind of grease the wheels of the Competition Tribunal process to get the deal across the line. But it hasn't worked. For whatever reason, the Competition Tribunal has decided that that's not how it's going to go down. And I guess the Competition Tribunal is looking at this and saying, well, long term, we want to have different providers of fiber in South Africa so that people can't, you know, price gouge on what is basically a utility. All good and well, but again, this just feels like regulators massively getting in the way of a South African growth story, because yeah, it just doesn't really make a lot of sense to me. I reserve judgment until you know, all the details of the decision come out. But the truth is, we've seen strange decisions from the regulators before. This one, quite possibly another one on that list. And it just really doesn't do South Africa any favors as an investment and business destination at all.
Now, let's turn our attention back to retail. As much of a juggernaut ShopRite has been, we've also been following the Pick n Pay tale of woe for the last year and a half or so. But there is some good stuff happening out of all of this. And of course, Pick n Pay has now put forward their investment case for Boxer, as well as what happens after that. So perhaps just give us a sense of where that story is at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk about Pick n Pay in more detail. You know, as I mentioned earlier, Boxer is really the gem in the business, as you've picked up there as well. The rest of Pick n Pay is doing badly. And basically what they need to do is they need to use Boxer now as their source of cash. So this is almost a carbon copy of what Transaction Capital had to do with We Buy Cars, which is basically to say, you know, the rest of our business is broken, but we actually have this one really good asset and we need to sell down our stake into the market because that's the asset that the market actually wants and that they're willing to give us money for. And then we're going to use that money to try and fix the rest of the disaster and try and get, you know, the best possible outcome for shareholders and avoid a situation where the bad eggs go and ruin that one little golden egg in the basket. So obviously Boxer is very much the golden egg here. I mean, there's other stuff in Pick n Pay that's not too bad. Like Pick n Pay clothing is quite a good business, for example. But on the whole, Pick n Pay is pretty much garbage at the moment in comparison to Boxer. That's the blunt truth of it. And so they are splitting Boxer out. They are listing Boxer separately. They reckon they'll get it done before the end of this year. And institutions will be allowed to come in and buy shares in Boxer from Pick n Pay Group directly, allowing Pick n Pay to raise billions of rands in the process. And then the Boxer shares will trade on the open market and there'll be a float and people will be able to buy shares and sell shares. In this case, you might see the Boxer share price pop nicely on IPO. I mean, that's theoretically what should happen. Whether or not it will happen, I don't know. Retail investors were excluded completely from this, which I found very annoying. So basically, you know, if it does pop on the day, it's because retail investors now are trying to chase something that they couldn't get their hands on previously, or smaller funds and institutions who might have been left out from, you know, the capital raise. So I think that was a bad miss. I think that honestly, they had a whole year to plan this thing. They could have very easily included retail investors in the capital raise and actually done something good from this process. But I guess they're too distracted with trying to save the core business. And like I said earlier, it's not going to be easy. Pick n Pay is making horrific losses. I couldn't help but have a bit of a chuckle at the management commentary to basically say, hey, we know we lost an absolute fortune, but don't worry, we planned to lose an absolute fortune. So we were in line with our plan. So like, I get it in terms of where they are in the turnaround and everything else, but still not exactly a great message to be putting out to the market of like, well, don't worry, you know, we planned to fail this way. There's a lot of work to do there. And yes, they've gotten a lot of money in now from their capital raising efforts, and they're going to get a whole lot more in from selling down in Boxer. Pick n Pay will retain a controlling stake in Boxer. And if Pick n Pay's business continues to do badly, then at some point they might have to sell down more of that stake. So it really is a big mess and it's going to be an interesting one to watch.
And then just lastly, Ghost, a story that popped its head up here in our news bulletins today and yesterday here on the station. And that's the issue that Renogen seems to have picked a bit of a fight with an investment called a group called Springbok Solar, which tracks back to Patrice Motsepe, ultimately. And this is all the makings of one of those corporate battles that somebody ultimately loses, but ultimately it's always investors that lose. Give us a sense, just give us an idea of what the story is and how you see this breaking down.
This Renogen thing is incredibly interesting. I mean, there's never a dull moment at Renogen at all. There's always something going on there, right? And you know, the company is working towards trying to list on the NASDAQ and raising US capital. You can't just go off to the NASDAQ and go and list something with like material uncertainties around it, especially not when it's a South African asset. You already have to convince a US investor base that actually, you know, you heard about this country, South Africa, at the tip of Africa. And yes, I know that we tend to, on the international stage, look like we are friends with countries that are not friends with the US. But don't worry about the geopolitics. Don't worry about the headlines. Just trust us. We have this great helium deposit and we're going to get this stuff out the ground. It's not an easy sell. When you start adding stuff like material uncertainties over whether Renogen even has the ability or the right under law to get the stuff out the ground, it's now getting awkward quite quickly. And that's what's happening with this solar group. Basically, from what I can understand, I mean, I haven't exactly done a site visit, so I don't know. But from what I can understand from the announcements, it looks as though a solar project is basically being built on land underneath which Renergen has the right to try and extract the gas. Now, this, if, in law, basically what would happen is the solar group would have to get permission from Renergen to be able to do this. And Renergen is saying, we are willing to give permission, potentially, provided you give us enough of a buffer zone that this works in line with our mining plans. Now, for whatever reason, that doesn't work for Springbok Solar. And they are basically just carrying on and kind of saying to Renergen, listen, you know, you're welcome to come and try and enforce this license of yours, but actually, we think there might be some issues with how you got this license or terms of the license or whatever it is. And we are willing to have that fight in court with you, which will drag out for years at a time when Renergen needs to do its NASDAQ listing. And the problem is, I mean, can you just imagine a world in which they go and list in the US and in 4 years or 5 years, a court says, hang on, Renergen, actually, you don't have this license. It would be a complete catastrophe. I mean, it would be, yeah, it would be a full disaster. It's hard to imagine anything worse for Renergen, actually. So Springbok Solar is basically just strong-arming Renergen right now, negotiating from a position of power to get the space they want. So I don't understand all of the technicalities behind it around the legals and, you know, mining law is a very technical thing, but it does just seem like quite a crazy outcome. And, you know, as you say, corporates having a big fight, it's the old elephants fighting and the grass gets trampled, and the grass here could well be shareholders.
All right. Thanks, Ghost. It was wonderful to hear your views and your insight. Thank you for sharing with us. We'll be back next week with more on that right here on the Ghost Biz every week on the Business Report.